Hello, friends and listeners of the LeaderCast podcast. This is Mo, the producer, jumping on really quick before this episode starts to let you know that we are going to be wrapping up season one of the podcast. The final episode in season one will be coming out on April 23rd. We are going to be coming back with an even better season two later this year. Stay tuned on our socials for updates as we know more, and thank you for being an avid listener.
Originally, he was like, I'll have someone lend me an airplane to fly around the world. What if I get an aircraft manufacturer to put the airplane together for me if I can get all of the parts donated? And this was a $600,000 airplane. And so he went to the CEO. The CEO of Columbia said, yes, I will put the airplane together for you, Barrington. I think in part so Barrington would stop bothering him. He was able to get the little pieces, the brakes, you know, little components that might be a couple $1,000 donated. But then it came time to get the engine. The engine was $100,000. They don't just give those away.
Welcome to the LeaderCast podcast, a weekly deep dive into the stories that transformed our guests into leaders worth following. I'm your host, Joe Boyd. If you've been enjoying the podcast, thank you so much for being a listener. One simple thing you can do to help us out is leave a review wherever you listen. Today's guest is Ethan Martin. He is the founder and president of the PFD Group, and he's the author with his co-author of a brand new book called The Mentorship Engine. We talk a lot about mentorship, how to find one, how to be one, and how to make a difference. Ethan Martin, welcome to the LeaderCast podcast. Excited to get to know you today.
Thank you, Joe. So grateful to be here. I love the great work you and your team are doing with LeaderCast.
Thank you. Thanks. That's awesome. I know we're going to talk about mentorship, I believe, but before we jump in, could you just let the folks who don't know a little bit about what you do and what you're up to?
Yeah, I am very blessed, Joe, to have my dream job. I get to coach what I call mission-driven CEOs. Hmm. These are leaders of companies of about 10 to 500 million in sales, and they are using their leadership. They are using their organization to make the world a better place, to transform their community. These are all for-profit businesses, but they're focused on a great culture, on really taking care of their people so that everyone they touch can flourish.
I love that. And, hey, maybe towards the end, you can just mentor me for 10 minutes. Maybe that could be our podcast. I'll put you on the spot.
We're always learning. So that's the fun parts about this.
God knows I need it. So, okay. So I want to hear a lot about that here as we go. I know you have a book that just came out, right?
Yeah. Our book is called The Mentorship Engine.
Okay.
And one of the things that I'm just so grateful for, I would never be here today, Joe, if it wasn't for the great mentors I've been blessed to have throughout my life. I grew up in the Boston area, and I fell in love with aviation at a very early age. And my parents, Joe, they were brilliant. I don't think they realized they were doing this, but I was 13, 14 years old, and I wanted to learn how to fly. No one in my family flew, and my parents were great. And they said, Ethan, if you want to learn how to fly, we'll let you do that. Because some of my friends' parents said, boy, that must be really dangerous flying small airplanes, right? And my parents had this vision, almost, I think, at a subconscious level to say, hey, this would be a great way to ignite a little entrepreneurial passion in our son, because learning how to fly is not a cheap endeavor. And so I learned early on how to become an entrepreneur and really benefit from those who had gone before to kind of learn from their wisdom and what was possible.
That's awesome. It's usually a mentor who comes along that gives us what we need. What would have been a treasure for you early on? And then what was standing in the way to kind of get that?
Yeah. So I think I had this crazy desire to want to travel, to want to fly airplanes. I'd had a copy of Flight Simulator. And so I started like teaching myself at an early age, but I didn't have the resources to fly. And it seemed like even back then in the early 90s, I needed like $10,000 to get my license.
Yeah.
How do you go about doing that? And so it was mentors, first of all, that just showed me, yes, it's possible to achieve this. So for me, it was so, so important to have these role models out there to say this is possible and help me break down this process. But also early on to say with a passion for aviation, there were so many different paths I could then go down, Joe. Like I knew, I think I wanted to be an entrepreneur, even though I didn't come from a family of entrepreneurs. And so I was fascinated by these different leaders in the Boston area. How did they get started? How did they choose their path? What was it that they loved about their roles? What were some things they might want to change?
Yeah.
And so I was so grateful to have that kind of side-by-side mentoring with these deep, authentic relationships. And one of the things I've enjoyed about your podcast, I had a chance to listen to some of your previous guests. Yeah. Someone talked about, you know, it may just be someone that taps you on the shoulder. It may be just kind of this passing occurrence. And as I was thinking about our time together, remember all the way back to when I was in first grade, we had just moved to a new town. I was at a parade, and it's one of my earliest memories. I had this balloon that I was cherishing at this parade. Like, I had this little balloon, and all of a sudden it popped.
Yeah.
And I just had this really vivid memory of like, what just happened? My balloon's gone. And this really nice lady just walking up and saying, take my balloon.
Yeah.
No reason, no nothing, just purely giving, purely serving. I remember being like, wow, why did she do that? There was just a desire to love and like be there. Right. And so that just so impressed me of like, what does it mean to be generous in our lives, even at an early age? And for me, I've always been fascinated by how do we lead from abundance? How do we lead from these models where everyone can win? And for me, mentoring has been this incredible model to both benefit somewhat from my mentors that showed me so early on what might be possible in life, but also to be able to mentor really interesting, diverse leaders, many of whom have come from very different backgrounds than me, and realize even though our backgrounds may be very different, even though we may look very different, our circumstances may be different, if we are committed to leading, if we are committed to serving others, we are so much better together.
Yeah. I would be shocked if that lady remembered giving you her balloon, right? Sure. So it's the things that we just sort of naturally do as leaders that can have a ripple effect that we'll never know. Because especially often when we're younger, we're just so hungry for affirmation or direction or encouragement. And that can come, obviously that can come from a formalized mentor relationship, but leaders kind of they mentor as they go, right?
Well, we're always being watched. What are we modeling?
Yeah.
How are we treating people? I mean, I think everything, it's such a privilege to be a leader. And I've so enjoyed, I felt almost this calling to be around a very diverse, different group of leaders. I think part of it is this kind of passion for travel. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things I was able to do many years ago is there was a young Jamaican American named Barrington Irving. He shared my passion for aviation. And to me, aviation is this incredible sandbox to see what's possible to explore. But historically, it's not been a terribly diverse community.
Right.
A lot of people in aviation look just like me. And so as we think about kind of demographic trends and growth and opportunity, I've always been passionate. How do we bring in more people in aviation? How do we share this incredible hobby, this incredible opportunity? And so back in about 2005, I came across this young Jamaican American named Barrington Irving, who had grown up in one of the toughest neighborhoods in Miami, just really challenging school system, a lot of violence. Really, the only paths out of that were to be a professional football player or sell drugs, be an entrepreneur in that space.
Right.
And Barrington had benefited from an early mentor that said, hey, I think you might be a pilot. You might be able to do this. And he said, I don't want to be just a pilot just for me. I want to show other young people what can they do with their life.
Yeah.
And I read this tiny article about Barrington, Joe, and it was one of those, like, you don't read many articles like that. So I reached out to Barrington and said, how can I help?
Yeah.
I benefited from these great mentors and got to know Barrington and realized early on his commitment to serve others. It was not about breaking records. And ultimately, he flew around the world at age 23, which is a huge achievement of itself.
Yeah.
What I was most proud of is he brought 500,000 students along with him.
Wow.
Learning about math and science and geography. He's an incredible storyteller. And what I learned from Barrington is he had no resources. He had no background. He had no track record. But he had this incredible commitment to loving and serving others and this faith and this vision that he would just literally not take no for an answer. And what I learned in terms of his incredible tenacity, I mean, most of us as entrepreneurs might get 10 or even 100 no's and we'll somehow find a way to keep going.
Right.
He was getting, I think, closer to 1,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just didn't have the resources and did it anyway. And so originally he was like, I'll have someone lend me an airplane to fly around the world. Well, as you can imagine, people were not just tripping over themselves to say, here, Barrington, take my multi-million dollar airplane. Yes, you've got 100 hours of flight time. Go around the world. That sounds good, right?
Yeah, right.
And literally had the vision, Joe, to say, okay, I am so committed to doing this. How can I break down the problem? If I can't get someone to lend me an airplane, what if I buy an airplane?
Yeah.
What if I get an aircraft manufacturer to put the airplane together for me if I can get all of the parts donated? And this was a $600,000 airplane. He ended up using a Columbia 400 back in 2007 for the ultimate trip around the world. And so he went to the CEO. The CEO of Columbia said, yes, I will put the airplane together for you, Barrington. I think in part so Barrington would stop bothering him. And what I saw, Joe, is he was able to get the little pieces, the brakes, you know, little components that might be a couple thousand dollars donated. Mm-hmm. But then it came time to get the engine. The engine was $100,000. They don't just give those away.
Right.
I kind of years. And so Barrington had this incredibly creative vision to say, I'm going to call the factory. He was a college student at the time and asked for a tour. He drove, spent the night in the parking lot, showed up on a Monday morning and said, found out that the CEO was going to be there. So just think about the vision, the creativity, right? He knew the CEO was probably the only person that could say yes. It's such a crazy, bold vision. And to show up, ask for the tour, and then say, hey, I'll be ready to meet with Brian after this tour. And they're like, is Brian expecting you? And he's like, yeah, sure. Brian's expecting me, right? So he meets with Brian at the end of the day, and Brian grills him. Who are you? Why are you here? You know, how do you have this bold, audacious vision? And was so impressed a week later, gave him the engine.
Wow. That's awesome.
And then Brian started inviting him to these speaking events. And I would do the same thing in Colorado because Barrington had this incredible gift to connect with young people, to be so authentic, to be so inspiring. And I think that's what really motivated all of us who are kind of mentoring and serving Barrington. But also we all got to learn from him because that sense of grit and vision and tenacity was just infectious. And then we got to apply back to all the things we were doing in the private equity and entrepreneurial side.
I love that. That's an awesome story. I love it. I want to meet Barrington. Can I meet Barrington?
You absolutely should. And what I love, Joe, is, you know, here's a great, you know, another just mission-driven leader. Today, he's built one of the most successful for-profit education companies. Because he had this vision growing up where he grew up in Miami.
Yeah.
Education was tough.
Yeah.
He might not have had, you know, the best teachers. They might not have had all the resources they needed to do their job. And so Barrington then took everything that he kind of learned in aviation and kind of the hands-on experiential learning that was so effective and said, how can I use technology to make the most under-resourced teacher a rock star? Mm. And has led this company called The Flying Classroom that uses video, these amazing stories to bring all of these concepts to life for students in a lot of inner city, underserved communities all over the US. It's just been awesome to see.
I love that. Well, we'll get Barrington on next year. Mo, producer Mo, you on that? All right. Mo's the voice you hear every once in a while from behind the scenes. So it does lead me to a question, though, because it's a question I get asked often from, like, usually younger leaders, like maybe in their 20s. I remember when I was that age, I desperately wanted a mentor. I can remember I used to journal a little more than I do now back then. And whenever I put goals for my year, one was like, find a mentor. Obviously I think the cleanest way to find a mentor relationship is for the mentor to initiate it, right? Like you did with Barrington, to reach out to someone that you feel like you might be able to help. And obviously the other person needs to want that, but, it is harder, more intimidating to be the one that needs mentorship and to approach someone and ask for that. So since you've kind of devoted a large part of your life around mentorship, I'm curious what your advice is to folks that know they need a mentor, but don't know where to start. And I found in my life, even sometimes I would ask for someone to mentor me and they would say yes, but it would still be on me to like set the meetings and set the agenda, so what's your best advice when someone knows they need it and just they can't find that fit or they don't know what to do?
Developing world-class leaders in your community is now easier than ever with LeaderCast. In addition to our flagship May event, becoming a presenting partner allows you to stream multiple events per year, each with an opportunity to earn money. The new LeaderCast lets you invite 1 to 1,000 people with unlimited streaming opportunities. Check out more at leadercast.com or the link in our bio.
Yeah, so I love where you're beginning, Joe. I highly recommend begin with that question.
Yeah.
And maybe this future mentee is journaling on, you know, what would it mean to have a great mentor? Mm-hmm. What are those things that I want to get out of the relationship? But what also can I give to the relationship? Mm-hmm. What can I do to pay it forward for that mentor? Because many mentors, I think, really enjoy that privilege of being a mentor, just like the privilege of being a CEO.
Yeah.
And so I would say being intentional and just open. One of the biggest life-changing mentors in my life was a CEO in the Boston area named John Wood Jr. I met John when my mom was chatting with his wife at our swim club.
Yeah.
And Mary Kay was talking about John loves flying. He was a flight instructor and he had two daughters that didn't share his passion for aviation. And here was my mom with a son who was really passionate about aviation without a father who was in the industry or any exposure to it, right? So kind of this openness around mentoring. And so grateful. John ended up being a mentor for 30 plus years of my life until he passed away 2 years ago. And just incredibly close on the flying side, on the life side, on business, right? And I think his relationship, I think it's Jim Collins talks about in Beyond Entrepreneurship 2.0, a great mentoring relationship, a great friendship is where both people feel like they're getting more out of the relationship.
Right.
Right. So I'd encourage kind of the mentee to kind of think about being just as generous back to the mentor or others as that mentor is being to them. And early on trying to figure out, even if they're in their 20s or 30s, who can they start mentoring?
Yeah.
Who's potentially falling behind them? And I think we're already almost at any point in time to be a great mentor, but start now, start giving first and be open. Cause it may be just a conversation you have sitting next to someone on an airplane with some great questions they ask, or it may be a 30-year plus friendship. They both can be fantastic.
And there's like dating might be a terrible analogy, but sometimes it could be one great lunch that you learn something from someone, and it doesn't have to be the mentor for the rest of your life. Right. But it probably usually starts with that, with reaching out with that lunch.
And I think just being prepared, come with a great list of questions for them, like really value their time.
Yeah. Even if you're younger, you probably have some sort of experience even to give back to the person that you may think knows everything.
And it gives your kids now a chance to connect with their grandparents.
Yeah.
These are just really important relationships. I think that's part of why Ramsey and I have been so passionate about mentoring. Ramsey's my co-author on the mentorship engine, because what we've seen in the work we've done, mentoring is so powerful, and CEOs really have a unique role to play in that mentoring relationship in terms of only the CEO can set the culture for an organization. And oftentimes when I first start working with a CEO or speaking to a CEO, Joe, they have some kind of higher calling that they're thinking about. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us are taught by a society, we need to wait till we're 60 or 70 to really make that impact, to make that difference, right? Mm-hmm. And what I see is with great CEOs, with great entrepreneurs, we can be serving now. Mm-hmm. We can be fueling that legacy now. I had the chance, one of the great mentors and investors I worked with was Morgan Neals, founder of Fisher Imaging, helped untold number of people with the medical device that his company created. But one of the most moving experiences I ever had, Joe, was going to his memorial service. Mm-hmm. Absolutely packed. Not a parking spot available. And all of these different people from the Denver, the Colorado business community, who's also a really avid skier up in Vail. So all these different communities coming together, and speaker after speaker articulating how Morgan, as an entrepreneur, had this calling, I think probably at least the second half of his life, to make a positive difference on every person he came into contact with. Hmm. And I can think of no greater tribute to Morgan, to his family, to everyone he touched, than just hearing all these incredible stories of just how generous Morgan was as a mentor, as a father, as an investor, right? And that's why we really felt kind of called to write this book, because I believe as CEOs, we can set that culture of really mentoring. And right now, it's hard to lead. We're in an uncertain world, right? And if we try to lead for our egos, if it's all about just how big a company can we run, how big an exit can we have, one of the things I get to see is a lot of patterns, Joe.
Yeah.
And a lot of, you know, what really works time and time again, what may work a couple of times, and what almost never works. And what I see is leaders who just want to chase the dollars. Mm. If they just want to do what society defines as success, oftentimes they end up very unfulfilled. Their kids don't have a good sense of their own identity because their father or mother hasn't been around much, right? They weren't really kind of clear on their priorities, like what really mattered.
Yeah.
And the flip side is when I see entrepreneurs who are really starting to think about that legacy, and maybe they're only 30 or 40, but how, as I grow this company, can I be a steward of my people? How can I help them upskill? And oh, by the way, it's really hard to find great talent right now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who are burned out. So if we lead from kind of this message of kind of sincere love and service to our team members, I find the right people tend to get attracted to that. And we can build companies that do very, very well financially. But that is just a byproduct of having a great strategy, having this mission of service, and having so much more fun along the way.
Yeah. I use the phrase, I don't know if I'll always use this phrase. There might be a better one, but I tend to say human-centered or human-focused leadership, which you shouldn't even have to say, because you only lead people. You don't really lead organizations or companies or movements. You know, you're just leading individual people. But I think so much of leadership has been turned into something other than seeing a human being in front of you and kind of helping them get where they need to go. And so for LeaderCast, when people ask what differentiates us, all I know to really say is like, look, there's other places that can help you be more successful. But our lane is human-centered leadership, because I get more excited when someone tells me, you know, I've been part of LeaderCast and using your stuff, and it's actually been great at work, but I think I'm a better husband and and dad because of this stuff too. And that taking it home is what gets me really excited, because then you really start to make a difference in people's lives, I think, you know.
Well, and that holistic part, I think, is so important.
Yeah. Yeah.
If one part of our life isn't working, how do we lead effectively in those others, right?
Yeah.
If we're the, you know, poster child, the world's greatest CEO, but we never see our family.
Yeah.
Are we being a great spouse? Are we being a great parent? Right. And what I see is, with the right leader, you can do all of this well, but it's hard, right?
Yeah.
We're so much better off not trying to do it alone. I mean, one of the, to me, really telling parts of this was leading throughout the pandemic with all the uncertainty, right? How do you be consistent to that culture? How do you be amazing to your people when no one may be watching or fully know what you do, right? Yeah. It's almost counterintuitive, but if you're really charging as a CEO, going all out, it is so important we take that downtime. We take that time to connect and not try to do this alone.
I wonder if sometimes we think org chart first when we think about mentorship, like the people that report up to me are the ones I should be mentoring. And I guess my question is sort of around, does it usually work that way? Or is it usually a mentor is someone maybe farther down the org chart, or someone even in a different company or something like that? And then just how, as if you know you're in a position of influence, say someone's listening to this and they're like, you know what, I haven't really been very intentional about mentorship. How on that side of things, how do they decide who to start actively mentoring versus just leading or managing them?
What I find is everything begins and ends with the culture of the organization, which the CEO is in a unique position to steward and be accountable for, and the composition of that leadership team. Making sure that we have the right people in the right seats that both really match the culture, because every client we work with has got their unique culture. They're going to be different than other organizations. So it's really key that these leaders, I think of them as the parents of the organization. They've got to fit the culture well, and they've got to be highly performing. If they're fitting the culture well, but maybe the role isn't the right role for them, we can find a different role for them. If they're not fitting the culture, which is really how we behave, they're going to be happier in a different environment. And it behooves us as their mentor, as their leader, to help them find that better environment.
Yeah.
And I do that from a place of love. Like, it's so, so important we get those right people around us for their sake, for our sake. And then how we're leading, how we're interacting with Joe is super important. CEOs we work with are really smart and talented. And oftentimes I'll kick off an offsite with a new CEO. We tend to work quarterly with them and their teams, mm-hmm. helping them create their culture, their unique and valuable strategy, and this really focused execution. And they'll see what we're going to kind of go through. And they'll say, Ethan, I've already told them all this stuff. I've told them where we're going. And I'm like, trust me, because to what you talked about, Joe, there's this element of humanness.
Yeah, right.
We're dealing with people. And I think it was once said, you can't be efficient with people. Because if you have all these really smart people, they don't want to be told just what to do.
Yeah,
right. So that mentoring relationship of the senior team is so key. And then they can cascade that mentoring out throughout the organization. But if they're not aligned, if they're not healthy, that's what's going to get cascaded out into the organization. So that's why we got to start there. And then for the CEOs of the senior team, I highly encourage them to get involved in organizations outside. There may be a local nonprofit, there may be investment activities you're doing, et cetera, where they can also then be mentoring not only future leaders, but also looking for great diverse talent.
Yeah.
Because leaders tend to exist in leadership opportunities. And so it can be a great recruiting platform as well.
Love that. Ethan, hey, we're out of time here. I want to let you go about your day, but I really appreciate you sharing your story with us and your work. And the Mentorship Engine is your book, right?
It's the book. I'd encourage people to come check out the website, record a video testimonial to their mentor, be an ambassador. We're really trying to start a movement to bring more and more mentoring out there.
And what is that website?
Mentorshipengine.com.
There you go. Intuitive. I like it. Thank you so much, Ethan. I'm sure we'll be in touch later. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Joe. Great to spend time with you.
In today's ultra-competitive job market, top-tier talent are leaving companies in search of top-tier professional development. Now more than ever, you must invest in your emerging leaders. LeaderCast 365 is a world-class professional development system featuring access to 3 annual LeaderCast events, a post-event journey to activate the inspiration and insights gained from LeaderCast events, plug-and-play lunch and learn programs with group discussion questions, concise video courses to address weaknesses and build upon strengths, and our library of more than 1,200 short-form videos from a slate of industry experts organized into 16 key professional development categories. Invest in your all-star employees and attract new top talent to join them with LeaderCast 365.